You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? All right, hold on. Here we go.
Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. On this week's episode, we talk to Texas A&M center Tyler Davis, and he sheds a little light onto this season and the SEC tournament. We're also going to try to figure out what's going on with the Texas A&M baseball team, and we might take a little look into who is the greatest athlete in DFW history after Dirk hits his 30,000th point last night. So, before we can get that going, I have to bring in the award-winning co-host of the My Aggie Nation podcast. That is President Zachary Taylor.
Well, thank you, sir. First off, I'd like to thank the Academy mom. Thank you so very much for having me. And
you should probably thank my mom, too.
Yeah, Mrs. Brown, yeah. Thank you so very much for plugging our show. And also, I would like to go on some kind of political rant that has absolutely nothing to do with the podcast, nor the awards of which I've been given. So, yeah, save the whales, global warming's bad, ELE, everybody love everybody. So there you go.
There you go.
Speech done. Pin dropped.
Okay, what is the – you have to describe the award. What is this award?
So it's the Texas Associated Press, Texas Association of Broadcasters. It's part of the AP Awards. And typically, there's two different sections. There is Division A and Division B. Division A is all the big cities. That's Dallas. That's the DFW area. Austin, San Antonio, and Houston. So those four make up the A division. Everybody else is B-listers, and that's what we are here in Little O'Brien College Station. And we put in clips throughout the year. Bill Oliver, our news director, is in charge of that. And so he'll send clips to the TAPB. They'll listen to them and talk it over. And typically, I'm not for sure how many people actually enter. Sometimes I think we're the only ones that enter Division B. So I'm not going to toot my own horn in this case, because sometimes I think I might be the only one that's being entered. So, but either way, I can say it's a major award.
There you go.
It's not a leg lamp. Sometimes for first,
you're gonna get a plaque for the room in here.
Well,
you need to hang it right under the logo. Over
well,
here.
I've got a plaque outside from last year.
Oh.
So they actually put Texas Association or Texas AP broadcasters. We've got plaques outside.
Do you get to keep a plaque, or does it just stay up here?
Yeah. Well, they keep it up on the wall for a little while, and then I think after it's kind of old, they give it to you. Okay. But I mean, if I was ever to move on, I'd probably take it with me.
There you go. Well, there's all kinds of AP awards out there. A lot of our stuff at the Eagles up for the AP Managing Editors Association Awards, and the My Aggie Nation podcast has been submitted for that.
Fantastic.
For online. So
now that's all that crazy stuff you
we'll
guys
see.
Do out in what, El Paso? Is that where they have it?
Yeah,
usually?
Down in that West Texas
well,
town.
We actually we have our award ceremony in Austin, in one of the clubs up at the top of one of the hotels on 6th Street.
Well,
so
I don't think we actually go. I mean, maybe our managing editor does.
That's a long ways, man.
When I got here last year, was right when awards were starting to come in, and I think we celebrated at Blue Baker last year on a university.
So you got that going for you.
Yeah. So anyway, like you mentioned, I guess maybe it was before we were on air. We, both of us, were down in Houston all week at Minute Maid Park to watch that Shriners Hospitals for Children College Classic. I think I got that right.
Boom, yeah. At Minute Maid Park.
And it's probably the best year, the best lineup they've had in that showcase, that tournament, since its inception. A lot of really highly ranked teams.
It's definitely going to be better than next year's.
Well, that's true.
And I don't mean to talk trash about the teams. Sam Houston State is going to be one of them. They are generally very good.
Louisiana's usually pretty good.
Yeah, Louisiana Lafayette's going to be there. U of H, I think, is going to be there, if I'm not mistaken. But it's also whenever you're talking about actual attendance, it's going to be much lower than it was this season.
Sure.
Because they've got Kentucky. I think they've got Vanderbilt, if I'm not mistaken, is going to – maybe somebody.
Yeah.
They're good teams. Don't get me wrong. They're good teams. But they don't have a lot of Texas ties, and there's not a huge fan base in Houston.
So this year, a lot of attendance records set. In fact, I think the only year that was more heavily attended, and I can't remember the exact year, but it was the year that they had Astros Fan Fest in conjunction with it. So there was all kinds of Astros related things that would draw people.
Did you see a tweet anywhere? I would assume that the A&M TCU game was the most attended, but LSU showed
up.
Well,
they didn't. They didn't do it by individual games. They just did it by days.
Okay.
And Saturday was way more heavily
because
attended.
If I remember correctly, the guy that was doing the PA in the press box would give us the attendance. I thought
the guy
every,
doing PA in
no,
the press
not
box.
No in the press box, not the now batting. Nick Shorby. And apparently that guy actually talks like that. The man who is the PA address announcer for the public address announcer for the Houston Astros. If you've ever been to an Astros game, the voice of God comes thundering down like a bolt of lightning.
Now up, Logan Foster.
And I didn't actually get to meet that guy, but yeah, he talks a little bit like that. Yeah. Either way, it was a great field. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it was a fantastic field. You had the top rank, depending on which rankings you were looking at. Which we look at D1 baseball because Kendall Rogers, hashtag shout out. TCU was ranked first. LSU was ranked fourth. Tech was ranked.
I actually knew the writers and the coaches. A&M was like 20. Tech was like 19.
Yeah.
LSU
everybody
was
ranked except for Baylor.
Two. Yeah. Ole Miss was just on the edge too, I believe, weren't they?
A lot of the rankings that I saw, they were in it, but
either way.
It was a lot of good teams.
Sure, and so lots of good action. Not so great for A&M. Well, you know, they had about what? There's I can't do my math now. What's 9 times 3? 27. They had about 25 pretty decent innings of baseball.
Well, you're not counting the TCU game that went 15 innings. So
yeah,
now you're really going to get messed up.
Sure.
On your
map. Well, I mean, if you're going to look at just the 9-inning sets,
they had three very good games, save two innings.
Yeah,
and both of those innings were in the bottom of the ninth,
right?
In which the bullpen completely imploded,
right?
And by imploded, I'm using that word lightly. If
right.
you can use imploded, it cratered, man. It did. And you hate to see that because for a lot of these guys, there was a lot of young guys that were thrown into some situations in which they had never been in before. And we talked about that's a big stage. And you got freshmen that are called in out of the bullpen to pitch to the number one overall team in the nation in TCU. And then against a very good Baylor team. But five walks in a row, this is going to that TCU game that A&M led 10-5, bottom of the ninth inning, and two straight pitchers walked five straight guys. And then it cratered. And then you go into this 15-inning marathon in which you had some really great pitching from some of those guys.
Kaylor Chafin,
who's going to start today, by the way, I believe.
Sean Weimer
for
TCU.
Yeah, both of them were just duking it out. And Weimer looked really, really good. Mm-hmm. A&M could not hit him. And then it ends up falling the way that it does. In some ways, I think that probably hurt less than Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though A&M was not leading by as much, they were up 3-1 in the bottom of the ninth against Baylor. You're coming off that loss on Saturday. You get a chance to bounce back. You can get a chance to leave 2-1 against some very good teams. And you bring in a veteran guy in Corbin Martin after a leadoff walk from Landon Miner, who looked really good, by the way. Mm-hmm. He did. He looked really good this weekend. And I think he might be making a case for a midweek start. You bring in Corbin Martin, and while he's chunking gas, he's throwing 96, 97, everybody in Division I baseball can hit a 96, 97-mile-per-hour fastball if they know it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if it's a four-seamer right down the heart of the plate. And he ended up, Baylor was got a run. It was 3-2. Bases loaded. They load the bases, A&M does, to set up a force out with two outs. And the dude absolutely tattooed that ball
mm-hmm.
off of Corbin Martin for a 6-3 win. And I think, especially when you think, too, that that's going to stick in your craw for a little while, That one, to me, I think, was worse. And Rob Childress kind of echoed those sentiments as well. He said, well, last night we didn't think it could get any worse. Well, today it did. Yeah. So to me, that loss to Baylor was worse than the loss against TCU.
I have to go back and kind of question how the whole bullpen was. I mean, if you're in the bullpen, your job is to come in and throw strikes no matter what situation you're in, and that's just your job. And right. a lot of that the onus falls on you a lot for that. But I don't necessarily. I guess I get, you know, Rob Childress said that Corbin Martin was pitching really well in that TCU game the night before. He pitched 28 pitches
that
Saturday.
A couple of innings, seventh and eighth. Yeah, I think he came on in the seventh and finished the eighth.
Yeah, and he was rolling. He was doing a really good job. And Childress said that with a save situation still intact heading into the, what was it, the top of the ninth, he went ahead and said, you know what, Corbin, go ahead and sit it, you know, shut it down. We're going to bring in, was it Cason Sherrod?
Yes.
To close it out.
Who has been, arguably, he's been the closer. I
sure.
mean, he's been lights out pretty much. I think he'd struggled earlier in the week, last week, mm-hmm. against Prairie View or Incarnate Word 1. But pretty much throughout the entire season,
well, Sherrod? Cason
yes,
Sherrod?
Yeah,
yes. Yeah. But, so, they decide to put Sheridan for the save. Well, it ends up that they end up scores two more runs, may not make it, you know, eliminating the save situation. And so he decides, well, I'm going to go ahead and go with Sherrod anyway, because I already told Corbin Martin, you know, to what he kept saying the word decompress. I don't understand really then why you head into an inning and you go ahead and are telling your pitchers what's going to be before I get through the half inning, especially when you're playing the number one team in the nation, when anything can happen. Because I still think that they should have rolled Corbin Martin out there in the ninth inning of that TCU game. Because to make a pitching change in that situation is a little bit interesting. Now, I get that you lean on the guy that's been your closer and has been successful mostly so far this season, but a lot of times in college, a closer is not as much of a sure thing. The closer role is a little bit vague, more vague than it is in the majors.
Hindsight's always 20/20, and I think if Rob Childress had to do it over again, I think he would leave Corbin Martin in. But again, Martin has been getting hit hard all year long. And he built up some confidence against TCU with a very good outing. And you're up by 5 runs. You're bringing in the guy who has been lights out for you in Cason Sherrod. I can't fault Rob Childress for making that decision. I really can't. I think he looked at it. He said, look, we are up by 5 runs. And Corbin Martin has pitched very, really great. You're kind of working him back in to get that confidence back. And he's done. He's done. We'll bring in Sherrod, knock it out of the ballpark, we'll be fine. And literally, I think if he had thrown strikes, I'm not knocking TCU because they're a very good offensive team. But if you just throw strikes, you can at least get a hard hit ground ball at somebody mm-hmm. or a line drive caught. I mean, but you give yourself no chance if you don't throw strikes. And he didn't throw strikes, and then Kyle Richardson is brought in. And I'll give Kyle Richardson a little bit of leeway because he's a freshman. And that is a tough, tough position to bring a freshman in. And he ends up walking some guys. And then you end up going to Chafin. So if there's one thing I could take maybe issue with in that decision by Childress is bringing Richardson in instead of Chafin to go ahead and close that thing out while you still were up. That made it really difficult for a freshman. But that being said, he was maybe thinking about saving Chafin for Baylor on Sunday. So that's the part of the problem, especially when you're playing on the weekends. You have to fiddle with your bullpen and figure something out. Either way, if you are a bullpen guy and you're coming in for Texas A&M, yeah, you're going to have some off days. Yeah, you're going to have trouble finding the plate. And in this case, I think they might have gotten squeezed a little bit. Both teams were. But you got to find a way to throw strikes, and you got to find a way to get out. So there's really no excuse when it comes to that. And to go back to your part of leaving Corbin Martin in, again, hindsight is 20/20, and we can project what would have happened had he stayed in. But we saw him pitch against Baylor in the ninth inning, and we saw how that ended up. And that's been a recurring theme with him so far this season, is he's got good stuff, but he leaves it out over the plate, and it's hit, and it's hit hard. Mm-hmm. So it's a really tough situation. Either way, the bullpen looked pretty much like a mess this weekend.
Do you bring Martin in against Baylor after throwing 28 pitches the night before? I mean, there is something to the fact that he did have probably his best outing this season that night before against TCU.
Well, yeah, and if you see that, I mean, you're making a case that he should have pitched the ninth against TCU. How would that have looked if he hadn't pinched the ninth against Baylor and they ended up losing? So it's a double-edged sword with that. Mm-hmm. And if you're Childress, yeah, I think he made the right choice, because he's trying to find somebody who can close a game out. And he's thinking, well, maybe Martin is over the hump now. Maybe he's back to his old self, and he can blow the fastball by guys, get him out in front of the slider or over the top, and he can come in and save this thing for us. We can leave with a 2-1 record in a really, really tough tournament. Instead, he's still searching for that lights-out closer. And it's not just a recurring theme this season. It's been a recurring theme the past three seasons, because Jason Jester struggled his last year as a closer after being lights-out the year before. Ryan Hendricks, very much, it's kind of eerily similar to Corbin Martin, because both of those guys, electric stuff, but they would either give up an extra base hit or they would strike you out, one or the other. And right now, it's the same issue this year as well. So the pen, you got to figure out something somewhere, some way. And we've been talking about Turner Larkins too. If and when he does return, will he be a weekend guy, or will he be put in the pen? Because if this continues, you need somebody that you can trust to be a closer. And with his injury troubles, maybe just relegating him to one or two innings as opposed to six or seven in a start, maybe that will help keep him healthy.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I just don't. Having covered him in high school, he's never been a bullpen guy. He's always been a starting pitcher, and there is definitely a different mentality, a different way you go about, you know, pitching through a lineup as a starter as opposed to a closer. And I don't necessarily think that he has, he might not have. I'm not sure. That's an interesting thought, because I figured for sure if he comes back and Childress doesn't want to mess up the flow of the weekend starters who have been good so far.
Yeah, Mitchell Kilkenny pitched a hell of a game.
Right,
Sunday.
I think you put him as a Tuesday starter and make him pitch his way into that weekend.
I just think he would have a better impact, and again, I think you could limit the chances of him getting re-injured by putting him in the back of that bullpen. And you also have to wonder, too, if and when he returns, is he going to be the old Turner Larkins, or is he going to have struggles? Mm-hmm. Is he going to have setbacks? So, as of right now, if the bullpen continues to pitch the way they did, it's going to be a big-time problem, especially come postseason time. That being said, this isn't the postseason.
No.
So, there's a lot of positives to take from that, because you can say, well, we get this out of the way. We get this implosion of the bullpen. We get these tough, heart-wrenching games out of the way. Better to lose to TCU in 15 innings in early March versus losing to them in 16 innings in June.
Sure. Now, with all the doom and gloom and what everyone is with all the eye-rolling that's going on with the A&M baseball team, it needs to be said that this is still an NCAA tournament team.
Oh,
this
yeah.
This is still a team that will probably host at least a regional, because they are they successfully filled all of those gaps that they have in the bat. They're going to have in the batting order, losing six of their top nine hitters from last season. I feel like the offense is where it needs to be.
And the crazy thing to me is that was the big question coming into this.
Mm-hmm.
Is, well, don't have to worry about the pitching. Worry about the hitting. How are they going to score runs? And they score 10 runs against TCU. They score, what, 8 against Tech?
Yes.
And, yeah, they were held to three against Baylor, but this is a team that has no problem scoring runs.
But, and also the thing to note about Baylor is there was a drastic lineup shift against Baylor, bringing in a lot of different other freshmen.
Yeah.
And trying to kind of get everything now. So while it seems like all doom and gloom, this definitely is a good baseball team that will be able to, I think, make more of a run at stuff than I think any of us would have assumed before the season started. I just think that the biggest problem, the most glaring problem, is not necessarily something that we quite expected, and that's what makes it a little weirder, a little bit more out of left field, because you didn't necessarily think that the bullpen would be the big problem. You thought it would be hitting.
Well, nothing's a for sure thing, and there's plenty of baseball left to play, so those guys can right the ship, or you turn to somebody else. I know Tristan Bayless pitched last night, which I believe was his first appearance all year long, if I'm not mistaken, and he pitched great. Granted, it was against UT Rio Grande Valley.
Well, a UT Rio Grande Valley team that was winning 6-5
right
in the fifth inning.
Right, exactly. So you got him. Lee May Gonzalez gave up the winning base hit against TCU, but again, he was on for, what, two-thirds of an inning,
yeah,
something like that? A third of an inning, so hard to judge him after he'd had a really good performance earlier on in the week in relief and long relief. So there's a lot of arms they have back there, and I wouldn't completely write off the guys that have struggled so far yet. I would give them some time, and they can turn that thing around.
Sure, and it might not be as much of an issue of not having enough arms, and just more or less finding the right places to bring in those arms, and that's just what they haven't figured out yet. So I definitely don't think it's doom and gloom for the Texas A&M baseball team. I think it's just they're still at the drawing board, trying to figure out what is the best combination for what they have in the bullpen and a little bit what they have in the lineup. So again, it's gonna be a team that's gonna be in the postseason, and might be having another one of those, you know, Robert Cessna wrote this week, might have another one of those rematches with TCU sometime in the postseason, because that seems like...
Which makes for great TV.
It's probably... Someone mentioned it, I want to say, in the press box or something. It's about the best college baseball rivalry there is right now.
But can you really call it a rivalry if only one team ends up coming out on top? That's the best
thing. You know, you can, because all the games are close. It's not like one team is blowing the other one out.
It's not like LSU and A&M football.
Right. There you go. Well, anyway, that's a little bit of baseball talk. We will monitor that situation.
By the way, a quick plug-in, since we're talking Diamond Sports, fifth-ranked Aggie softball, 18-1 on the year. Give the ladies a shout-out. They're going to be playing at Sam Houston State tonight at 6:30. I will be there calling the game on Willie 1550, also 12man.com.
Got to give Zach that shout out. Listen to Zach on the call with the softball team tonight. So we will move on. We'll sit down with Texas A&M center Tyler Davis and get his thoughts on what happened this year and what they still can do to make this a successful season as they enter to the SEC tournament up in Nashville. That's next on the My Aggie Nation podcast.
Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Zach Taylor alongside Travis Brown. We are on location, not live, but we're on location, visiting with Fighting Texas Aggie basketball player Tyler Davis. Tyler, first off, congratulations. Named the second team All-SEC. I know you got some other post-game accolades, but talking with you about that, though, you say you're not a big awards guy. That doesn't really, I mean, not saying it doesn't mean anything to you, but maybe not as much as it would to some guys.
Yeah, I've never been a big awards person. You know, I just like to put in my work and get better every day, and that's what I look forward to the next day when I wake up. So awards are cool. You know, you kind of take a second to step back and take a look and say, you know, I accomplished this or whatever, but, you know, there's always room for improvement, always trying to take that next step.
Heading into that SEC tournament, last year, your freshman year, y'all were way on up there, had a couple byes. It's going to be a different experience this go around. How is preparing this year different than last year, even just kind of mentally going into the tournament different from your first go around with that?
I think preparing is always the same. You know, I try to keep my same routine every day. I think as a team, we know obviously the Circumstances are different this time. You know, we coming in, we got to win four to make it to the NCAA tournament. So there's a big picture that we see, but it's important that everybody slows down and takes it one practice, one game at a time.
Mm-hmm. Does it feel different at all this go around?
Feel different? Mm-hmm. As in just playing?
Just in the, your thoughts leading up into it.
Yeah, I mean, it does. It feels different because we have a lot to prove and we have a lot of people counting us out. You know, that's what the difference is. A lot of people are looking at us and saying, you know, they probably can't do this or that, whatever. Do they have enough depth and this and that? But at the same time, mentally for me, it's just, you know, I believe in my team. I know that we've improved steadily through the course of the year. And I know that if we can lock in and stay focused one game and we know we only got to win four, I think we can do it.
Look at some games like you guys have played, a close one against Kentucky this past Saturday, games against Arizona and UCLA. I know that was early on in the year, but those are some really, really good teams. Played them close, West Virginia at Morgantown. And then maybe some games that it didn't really work out the way that you wanted to, obviously, and it wasn't as close. So what's the difference there, I guess, in the consistency between those two games? I guess that's what it's all about, is being consistent, right?
Yeah, I mean, you got to be consistent when it comes to winning games. Our identity has just got to be the same every game. We can't come out and, you know, like last game we only turned it up 8 times. We can't come out against Vanderbilt and turn it over 20 times and expect to win or expect to be close. You know, it's got to be consistent in what we do and what the coaches teach us. So I think, like I said, the focus and everything is just important, just one day at a time.
Have you looked back on the regular season at all since it's kind of been over and kind of taken stock of what happened, or just kind of what is your feelings when you think back about this regular season, maybe compared to what you were thinking about this team as the season was getting geared up?
I haven't been thinking about it much. I've been, you know, just moving on to the next game, whatever. But when I do think about it, it's just I see a lot of potential, a lot of young guys, but a lot of potential on our team that, you know, I kind of wonder, you know, what I could do differently, how I could have been a better teacher, a better teammate, all those little things. But at the same time, you know, we still got basketball to play, so I'm not really strung up on that stuff right now.
Had to play without DJ this past month or so. I mean, you guys were high school teammates, so it's been a long time since you had to play without him. What's it been like? And from your perspective, what's it been like for him being on the bench?
It's been different. You know, I really love playing with DJ because he just brings, like, he helps me bring a certain energy. You know, there's just a certain thing when you're playing with somebody like him, and I have been playing for a long time. It's just kind of, it just feels good to have him on the court with me. You know, I know what he's capable of. I know what he can do. And when he's out there doing it, I know, you know, he's going to do it at a high level. And, I, you know, of course you miss a guy like him, someone you can really stretch the floor, his length, his ability to rebound as well. You miss that stuff, but, you know, he's sitting out right now, and, you know, my prayer is always out to him, so.
So it seems like every time we've come in here, you know, things, there's been some ups and downs this season, but y'all have always kind of been loose, not really joking around, but you know, light. Is that a characteristic of this team? I feel like that's probably a characteristic of you. You're probably one that likes to play, not, you know, head down. Is there something to that?
I think it's more of a characteristic of the team than it is myself. You know, last year with guys like Caruso, I mean, he's a loose dude, but you also had a Jalen in the house who were just, like, very intense. And Jalen, you know, I spent more time practicing against him, so I kind of took his, you know, path of just being, like, real focused and, you know, don't have to say much, but just locked in and ready to just play hard. And that's what Jay was to me, and I really loved that about him because he played so hard. So that's me, like, more of just being, like, quiet. I don't have to say much, especially when it comes to speaking out loud and being that kind of yeller, that rah-rah guy. That's not me. I expect guys to get their job done, and, you know, I expect them to watch me do the same thing. And if I'm not doing it, then they're supposed to get on me for it, too, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm not a big rah-rah guy or anything. I like being, you know, kind of just in the zone.
For sure. And then I know you want to take everything a game at a time, and that's the way you get through a tournament. But I'm sure big picture thing is you want to win that tournament, so you do get that NCAA tournament berth. If that's not in the cards, is it a success if you're still playing after the NCAA tournament?
After the NCAA tournament?
I mean, after the SEC tournament, excuse me.
I mean, yeah. The goal is to win every year when we come together in the summer. The goal is to win and compete for a national title, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal. That's what we work for all summer, thinking about a national title and how what can we do to get there and what work we're going to put in. So, obviously, winning this SC tournament, to me, is a must. We have to win a tournament to play in an NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a must. Mm-hmm. But I understand, like, there's a process to that. And that's what I'm more speaking of, is we have to go through this process first to even get to that point. Mm-hmm. And then once we get to the, you know, winning the SEC tournament, God willing, and, you know, we take our steps from there.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, I know there's been a lot of talk about some of the negatives and stuff that's happened this year. As you look back on this regular season, what's been the best part for you? What's been the high moment?
The high moment, really, just this whole experience. You know, I like talking to my mom and stuff. Just, you know, learning, just learning from this year. You know, like you said, people talk about how this year should have been this and could have been that. But me, it's like, okay, we're going through this. We have our ups and downs. Sometimes big ups, sometimes big downs. And it's like, it's completely different from last year. So this is a learning experience. It's been that all year. Me being in a different position as part of the offense, like a major part of the offense. Me having to be a vocal leader every day and, you know, be a great teacher for guys like Rob and a better listener for guys like Tavario, because there's no Jalen over there to pick up my slack. There's no House over there to, you know, pick up my slack. You know, there's the guys that we have, and now I'm one of those main guys. And it's just been a learning experience all year. But it's been a great one. Mm-hmm. You know, win or loss, you know, that's not, you know, I don't think the wins or losses show all the work that we put in the summer or what we do every day in practice. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys, they work hard every day. They go hard. We go at each other every day. It's been a growing process for all of us. Mm-hmm. It's been fun. It's been a great one.
And finally, what has it been like? The future is a little bit uncertain for Robert Williams here on if he'd be back or if he's in the NBA. What has it been like playing with him this year?
Man, that kid is just incredible. I mean, he's been one of the guys to just keep my spirits higher, you know, because I put a lot of pressure on myself. So Robert's been that dude that, you know, even after a game, like say I didn't play well and we lost, he's been that kind of guy that just comes up next to me. He's like, hey man, like, you know, we just gonna keep working, we're gonna keep getting better, whatever. And also, I mean, just playing with him on the court, you get to learn and experience what it's like to play against real athleticism and real length. And also me getting to practice against that, you know, him guarding me and, you know, playing offside defense. Like, you get to experience all these things when Robert's on the floor. He's a tremendous relief when you're on the floor with him. And he's a big asset to the team as far as personality and being part of that big spirit. He's just going to be great. He's mm-hmm. destined for greatness as long as he works hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is Tyler Davis of the Texas A&M basketball team as they head into the SEC tournament this weekend. Tyler, thanks for joining us. And a guy from my hometown, so it's always good to talk to a former Dallasite. This is the My Aggie Nation podcast, and we'll be rolling on with more A&M talk next.
The My Aggie Nation podcast. Zach Taylor, Travis Brown, our respective drinks in front of us. Mine in my Arctic cup, my knockoff Yeti, and yours in your Snapple.
I have one of those Arctic cups, and I enjoy it thoroughly.
Plastic bottle. Do you recycle? No, are you a recycler?
Not really.
Ooh, you know, here in town, it's free. Or it's part of, at least my renter's thing, it's part of the rent, I guess.
We don't have that option, because we just have a big old dumpster outside.
Really?
So, yeah.
And apparently, Tyler, because my grandmother used to live down here, then she moved back to East Texas, and Tyler, you have to pay extra, and she thought that was just abhorrent. She was thinking, what on earth is Tyler, Texas, doing? And I said, well, Grandma, East Texas is going to East Texas. Okay, they don't care about recycling.
Isn't that what everyone asks? What is Tyler doing?
What is Tyler doing today?
Yeah.
And it has the world's largest rose garden.
Yes. Well, you
which
know,
was actually a question on How Texan Are You? One of those Facebook quizzes. And I definitely blew that one out of the park.
Sure. Well, you know, and it fits well, good segue, because we just found out what Tyler was doing in regards to A&M basketball. But what we were doing this weekend was not only watching Texas A&M baseball down at Minute Maid Park, but, you know, I'm glad that you shot me a text last week and said, hey, you know, it's probably going to be a pretty late game. You want to go splitsies on a place to stay? And I said, you know, sure. Oh, let's, you know, think in the might find a nice Fairfield Inn or something like that. You know,
the old go-to, the old Fairfield
the
Inn.
The old go-to for Robert Cessna and the Eagle, the Fairfield Inn. Get those Marriott points. But no, you came back and you were like, no, I think I'm going to get an Airbnb.
Airbnb.
Get a nice little apartment. If for those of you who don't know what Airbnb is, it's basically the Uber of lodging. You pay some money over an app. People post list their humble abodes online, and you can pay some money, and then you can stay actually in that person's apartment, house, condo, whatever, with their furniture and their everything. And you stay there, and then you leave.
And it's generally cheaper than a hotel.
Generally. So you said, yeah, let's do an Airbnb. And I said, okay, you had done this before. I had not. Overall, I cannot knock the experience. It was nice, very nice apartment in a nice mm-hmm. part of town close to where we were trying to stay. Or we had to work, and I, you know, pretty easy in and out. Can't knock the experience.
We didn't spend a lot of time there either.
No,
because we got in at about 3:30 and fell asleep.
Right,
at least I did.
After the 16 or 15 inning game with TCU, it was pretty darn late. So but here's my thought process, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, we paid about $100 to stay in this Airbnb.
Total. 50 each.
Total. And I think that price was because we were in probably a popular part of town.
Oh, no doubt.
Because I don't know if I would pay that money. Because the other part of the experience is, and granted, you did most of this because I took the couch and you took the bed, but you had to...
Because you have a thing about sleeping in other people's beds.
I don't really like sleeping in other people's beds. That probably weighs a lot into my opinion on this as well. But after you woke up, you had to take all the sheets off the bed and throw them into the washer. And when we used towels, you had to throw some towels in the washer. And I think we had to take out the trash. And we kind of had to do our own maid service,
yeah,
too, and paid $100. And, so
and there were no mints on the pillows.
There was no mints on the pillows. So I think in the future, if I'm going to drop, a one hundo on a place to stay, in that situation, I would maybe lean more towards the finding one of those good old $79 Fairfield Inns, where they clean your room for you and you can go out. But I get the draw of staying in the popular part of town.
I'll tell you what is the biggest draw for me when it comes to Airbnb is location. It's not necessarily all the amenities because as we talked about, we didn't spend much time there. And actually, we wouldn't have spent much time either way if the game had ended early. But it's not necessarily the amenities. It's not really how nice is the place, even though I don't want to stay in a dump. It's how close is it to where my event is or where I want to go. And this was in Midtown Houston, which was technically, I think, like 1.3 miles from the ballpark. We probably could have ended up walking there faster than we could have driven because Houston traffic is abysmal. And it ended up being, it was a really nice place. And so all in all, I thought that was the main reason why I got it. And also because it was in Midtown, apparently I was texting a friend who is a Houstonite who is a young single lady and likes to go out and about. And it turns out that was near some of the hottest places in town. Even though we didn't get to experience that because, again, by the time we were done, at least for me, the bars were closed.
Mm-hmm.
So there was nothing to do but go to the CVS and hang out with a homeless guy that was outside.
Yes.
Other than that, we really didn't do much. But overall, basically the only thing I'm looking for is a roof over my head.
Okay.
And you had already used up all your friend points with all your peoples in Houston.
Yeah, from the Super Bowl.
And I have family that lives in Pasadena, but I didn't want to put them out. Can you imagine me rolling in? Because, they're kind of older, rolling in at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning and waking them up and all sorts of other stuff. So overall, it was the best option for me.
Sure.
And how far is the Fairfield Inn from Minute Maid Park?
I don't know. Maybe when you are talking next, I'll look it up. But The I will admit too that I got a little spoiled. My family came down to watch some baseball too, and I stayed with them on Friday night going into Saturday, and we discovered a whole new hotel chain that is just awesome. And that is, and there's one of them new here in College Station, and that is the, I don't know if it's Aloft or Aloft, but it's that whole hotel brand, and they're nice.
It's not Aloof?
Maybe it's, no, it's not Aloof.
Aloof?
It's not Aloofa. But they are really quality. It's kind of, you know, they're very, it's in the same price range as kind of your Fairfield Inn or whatever, but...
Really? That place was... It looked nice from the outside because we drove by it. And you were like, hey, that's where I stayed last night.
Okay, if there was a Fairfield Inn in the middle of downtown, it'd be in the same price range.
Okay, yeah.
The one here, at least, is in the kind of similar price range as that kind of hotel. It's kind of like living in an IKEA showroom.
Yeah, really?
It's very modern, and I kind of like it.
And all of the... Furniture is crappily made and be taken apart in 20 seconds?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that at all. It's just very modern.
Were there Swedish meatballs?
That would have been cool. No. Yeah. But, there's just lights and cool places, and there's like, more than enough. Here's, like, a big thing that you know, staying in older Fairfield Inns all across the country, there's power outlets everywhere. For your phones and your devices and your laptops, and there's just plugs everywhere, and that is awesome. So that's a big help too. And then at least the one, because the parents came down a night early too, so we stayed at the one here in College Station before, and they have a nice big lobby that has a bar in it and everything.
Wow.
You can go hang out at.
That
and
does
they
sound
have,
fancy.
They have they had live music playing. In the one in downtown Houston was going to have live music over the weekend too, just kind of like a little singer songwriter, not really open mic. But
speaking of that, we need to talk about the place we had brunch at on Sunday.
Yeah, so you
we get a chance
delve into that.
Okay, so as I mentioned, we're in Midtown, and there's a lot of restaurants, bars, things like that are around it. We didn't really get to experience that, but on Sunday, my uncle, who happens also to be a TCU grad, was in town, so we met him for brunch at, I can't even remember the name of the place
Lorenzo's
Bar and Grill, okay? And I'm thinking Lorenzo's Bar and Grill, it's probably a sports bar, you know, go and have some pizza or whatever for an early lunch before TCU and Ole Miss played. And we end up, this place was probably two blocks from where we actually stayed, but we ended up driving around in a big circle. Part of that was my fault because I'm terrible at giving directions, mainly because my phone is terrible at giving me directions, so
yeah.
Then I was giving you bad directions. But we ended up driving around for basically 15 minutes when what would have been a five-minute walk from where we were. But that being beside the point, we go into this place, and it was really weird how it was set up. This is a new place that I found on Yelp, and yeah, it had the sports bar look to it because there was a bar and a bunch of seats that were around it and several TVs showing different things. But it was also kind of like Cheddar's, maybe. Maybe a little bit even dressier than Cheddar's because the lighting was low. And the every waiter and waitress was wearing a black vest with white shirts and stuff.
This is the best way I could describe it. It was like walking into a mid-tier hotel bar circa 1984.
Because of the music. They had a live DJ.
Well, but if you look at, I mean, but not even because of the music. Everything was like, you know, mold, like wood with like the like crown molding carvings in it. And,
yeah.
And everything like that. And like hotel bars now kind of usually look like an IKEA store.
Yeah.
So it was old school. It looked like one of those old school hotel lounge bars.
But it was just weird the way that it was set up. And like I said, they had a live DJ pumping tunes in this place that were in the 70s and 80s. And he looked like he could have been in his 70s or 80s. And he gave some shout-outs because apparently this place has regulars for brunch. So he's like, hey, Jim and Jack, nice to see y'all back here again. I see we got our regulars back in eating some chicken and waffles. Welcome back to brunch. Remember, Lorenzo's is open for brunch Sundays from...
Yeah, he would drop live spots in the middle of his DJing.
So that was our experience at brunch after our Airbnb experience, which we learned more about the guy who was hosting us than I ever thought we would. Or I guess maybe I came up to some presumptions.
Well, that's a whole other story for a different time. But we have a few minutes here. Let's do the abrupt segue transition, because last night we watched some history. At least I watched some history. I think you slept.
Yeah,
but
I was tired. No. I did catch that.
Okay.
I had the game on.
Okay. Well, Dirk, the Duncan Deutschman from the G last night, scored his 30,000th point, is the sixth highest scorer, became the sixth player. I think it's the same thing. Right?
Yeah, sixth player
to reach the 30,000 point plateau, and he was on fire, hitting, I believe, six of his first six shots, had 18 points in the first quarter, and then drilled those two last points to get across that threshold, and like the first or second play, the second quarter, it was pretty...
On a fadeaway,
very Dirk-esque. It was just pretty darn cool, pretty darn impressive. And so I, having thought about this for a while, tweeted out 41, number one in DFW, number one athlete in DFW sports history. And I should have thrown in the "don't at me, bro." But I got added a few times because people just wanted to debate this. I don't know why people wanted to debate
this. It's a good debate.
But people wanted to debate this.
Because there's not a clear cut.
To me, anyways,
there's not clear cut. You think Dirk unequivocally is the number one?
Yes. I think unequivocally. And that's...
So what are the requirements for that?
Well, I mean, I think you have to accomplish some sort of statistical feat that puts you into the pantheon of people in your sport,
like the most career rushing yards for a running back,
sure, or the greatest,
and winning three Super Bowls,
or the greatest American born hockey goal scorer,
which Madonna is definitely up there.
So,
and he had a little shout out video to Dirk last night.
Yes, he did. So we'll start off with this argument. I think that we'll kind of start from the end and work backwards. I think what I came to the conclusion with talking with people online, is that probably most people's sports Mount Rushmore, if you will, would be Dirk, Mike Madonna, Yvonne Rodriguez, and Emmett Smith.
I would even go...
I mean, there's... And then you're with honorable mentions to Roger Staubach and Nolan Ryan.
Yeah, but... In this kind of, shouldn't a requirement be that the guy has pretty much spent his entire career in Dallas?
Yes. I think that weighs into it a lot, too.
I think so. You know, and Pudge had a lot of great years. He had that one great year for the Marlins where he won a World Series. He spent a lot of years with the Tigers. And I'm not saying, because Pudge is like my favorite baseball player of all time. And
he's right there. He's sitting right behind you.
Yeah, but I would argue that Michael Young probably is when you were talking about specifically Dallas sports figures, I would think that Michael Young would be bigger than Pudge.
But Michael Young is never going to be a Hall of Famer.
Well, no, he's not.
I get what you're saying, and I weigh that into
and
it,
Nolan,
too.
And Nolan was with the Rangers, what,
because
4 years?
I think that's why I give Dirk the nod over these guys, is because not only was he great and achieved, you know, a championship and all of these great stats on the court, he was, his personality, he became a face of the city. There's a lot of athletes that can come in and do great things, but never necessarily become a face of the city. They're kind of, they're just their own brand to themselves, and I think Dirk is synonymous with Dallas now. I think that's one of the reasons why I certainly would never ever take Mike Madonna out of that Mount Rushmore, because as long as the Stars are in Dallas, Mike Madonna is going to be the founding father of hockey in Texas. Just like, and I'm not putting him on the same level on the ice, I mean, you know, it's not far off, but just like Wayne Gretzky was the godfather of hockey in California coming down to L.A., and that's really why hockey spread into the southern part of America, is because of the trade for him down to L.A., Mike Modano is the reason that hockey is alive and well in Texas, and I think he deserves the nod for that. It certainly helps that the fact that he's the greatest American-born scorer ever. I think that you have to give Emmett Smith... I mean, yes, the career rushing yards record is a big feat. I don't know if it's... The career rushing yards record is going to be broken again, probably soon.
By who?
I mean, granted, yeah, I guess the game has changed a little bit. And you
Adrian Peterson can't stay healthy enough. He's probably going to retire in a few years.
I mean, within the next decade, I could see it falling. And yeah, LeBron's going to join the 30,000 club. To me, that this 30,000 plateau seems more unobtainable.
By the way, he's only the third player, one that LeBron will not get. He's only the third player to eclipse 30,000 points with one team.
Right.
Including Kobe and Karl Malone.
Right. And he will be, if he plays one more season, I think he'll be the only player with Kobe to play 20 years with the same team.
Really? I think you're right, because Malone went to L.A. His last, 2 years?
Sure. So... I just think that Dirk, I mean, here's the real indication. Everyone you heard on that broadcast last night was talking about not if, but when they have a statue of Dirk outside the stadium. And the only other athlete statue that I know of in DFW is Nolan Ryan in the ballpark in Arlington.
Yeah.
And so when you start talking statues, I think that, you know, no one has talked about a Mike Modano statue. No one has talked about a Pudrick. No one has talked about an Emmett Smith statue. I get that's a little bit of a vague qualifier, but it's something to consider.
Does AT&T Stadium have any statues outside?
There's a Landry statue.
Is there?
Yeah.
I mean, you got the Ring of Honor. The Mavericks, do the Mavericks have anything like that? Do they have
the retired
numbers?
Yeah, they have a few retired numbers.
So, if you put it like out in front of the AT&T Stadium, I see no reason why they couldn't have a Modano statue on one side and like a Dirk statue on the other.
Sure,
like
but just the fact that I covered the Stars for 3 years, including the or 4 years really, including the Mike Modano's number retirement, and never once did I ever hear any rumblings of, you know what, I think we might need a statue outside.
A lot of it, too, you have to keep in mind, what were the Mavericks before Dirk got there? Because the Rangers, well, again, I don't know if you can necessarily classify Nolan Ryan because he spent 4 years there. He'll always be a Ranger to me. But when you look at the Cowboys, obviously they had won Super Bowl championships with Tony Dorsett and Roger Staubach. I mean, they had plenty of great teams before Emmett, before the Triplets got there. The Mavericks were abysmal before Dirk got there and Steve Nash, and ending up winning an NBA championship. And Dirk has been there for all these years, and he's a very likable guy, very charismatic. But when I look at it, when I look at strictly the numbers and the things that he's done, you can look over sports and say it's comparing apples to oranges. I would think one of the reasons why Emmett Smith might not be as iconic of a sports figure is because he did it as part of the Triplets with Aikman and Irvin.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Dirk, not saying he's done it by himself, because he hasn't.
I mean, he had Nash and Finley when he started out.
Yeah, and with basketball, too, people become much more acquainted with the players because, and this might sound very simplistic, because they're not wearing face masks. They're not wearing, well, they're wearing uniforms, but does that make sense?
No, I know.
Because you become much more personal, and players and fans are closer to the action, and they can see these players, and they can see what they do. I think, because, let's face it, if you walk down the street and you see, I don't know, some of the guys that are for the Cowboys on the football team, you would have a harder time recognizing their faces as you would basketball players.
Sure. But doesn't that also go a little bit two ways in the sense that basketball is a little bit more of an individual sport, as is baseball.
Football.
That's why I know a lot of people throughout Troy Aikman, and I know a lot of people throughout Michael Irvin for that too, because they're part of the triplets. And you can get this argument a little bit with quarterback too, but I feel like with what Emmitt Smith was able to accomplish, running back is about as the other than maybe quarterback, but then
quarterback you can't throw the ball to yourself.
Right. Running back is the most individual position in football. And so that's why I can kind of try to put him in that mix a little bit more, because I just think that there's more pressure on Dirk as a basketball player doing what he's trying to do. There's more pressure on Pudge trying to do what he did. There's even a little bit more pressure on Mike Modano, because again, it's a little bit more individual than football.
There are more individual feats, I think, or at least ones that are observable, that makes sense. Like pitching. A pitcher can have a much greater outcome on a game than, say, an outfielder. Because an outfielder, yeah, they got to make catches. They can make great catches. They can hit great at the plate. But ultimately, a pitcher has that ball in his hand every single time.
An outfielder can have a bad game, and they can still win. A pitcher, if he has a bad game, it's really hard to win. To win. So,
and the same thing with the running back. I mean, people talk about it all the time. If the run game isn't going, then it's really hard to win, even though the Patriots seem to somehow do it every year. But, yeah, it's kind of an argument that you can go around and around in circles. But I think we can agree that the Mount Rushmore, if you're covering all the sports, would be Nolan. I think Nolan would have to be, because he's a Lone Star native.
Okay.
And
so hold on, before you get into it, I think I said mine was Dirk, Mike Modano, Ivan Rodriguez, and begrudgingly Emmitt Smith, because I got talked into it last night.
Okay. So mine would be all of those, except I would replace Nolan with Pudge. As much as I love Pudge. Again, I don't think you realize how much I love Pudge.
No, I'm right there with you.
As a little fat catcher back in the day, Pudge was my idol.
I
actually got to talk with him at the Texas Sports Hall of Fame, which was awesome. And I'm really wanting to go up to Cooperstown and watch him get inducted this year. But yeah, I would think that Nolan is a much more iconic figure, even post-career, in his career afterwards. So, yeah, mine would be Dirk for basketball, Emmitt for football, even though Aikman would be close up there too, but Emmitt for football, Modano for hockey, and then Nolan for baseball.
So did you have Dirk in there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dirk basketball, Mike hockey, Emmitt football, Nolan baseball.
Okay.
And then where are you going to – what about FC Dallas?
If you're gonna throw soccer in there, the soccer Mount Rushmore is Tattoo from the Dallas Sidekicks. But that's a whole other. You know, funny thing is, we'll get onto this.
Soccer is what European women used to do for fun while their husbands were cooking in the kitchen. That's how soccer was created, according to Hank Hill, and I agree with
him. According to Hank Hill,
come on, Bobby.
Dirk and Steve Nash, here's your random story for the day that I've heard from very reliable sources. Dirk and Steve Nash, when playing back at Reunion Arena, young guys back playing there, would walk over to Reunion from their places when the Dallas Sidekicks, which is the indoor soccer team in Dallas, has been around since the late 70s, and would watch the Sidekicks and Tattoo play, because, you know, Dirk, big soccer fan from Germany and everything, get really into it. So when they retired Tattoo's number a couple of years ago, Tattoo being one of the all-time greatest scorers of indoor soccer history, a couple of years ago, they did the same kind of similar thing they did with Dirk, with other famous athletes, giving him well wishes and everything. I think Mike Modano was one of them, but Dirk had several of them, because Dirk was actually a big Dallas Sidekicks fan.
Yeah.
Walk in, so that was kind of a cool thing, and I'm sure that.
And that's what's neat too, is whenever you get athletes in the same town that are genuinely fans of the other teams. Like, mm-hmm. I know Darren Collin was a big Stars fan, or is still a big Stars fan, and Dirk's a big Rangers fan. I mean, Dirk Dirk makes all the rounds, and then mm-hmm. you see Tony Romo and Jason Garrett and Jason Witten at the
Andy Dalton at the game last night
at the
too.
Mavs game. So Dalton being a Dallas guy, TCU.
He's actually with TCU
still
Houston
there,
guy.
Right?
So anyway, so we will agree to disagree in our Dallas Mount Rushmore. If you just fervently disagree with us. You can add us.
You can add us
on
Twitter.
You can
move to Houston.
Well, you can do that and then add us on Twitter. That's at Zach Taylor Sport, at Travis_L_Brown. Tell us what your Mount Rushmores of Dallas sports are. Or if you're not from Dallas and you just want to kind of throw out what your hometown Mount Rushmores are. I know this is a thing that bounces around every so often.
I didn't think about that. What would it be for Tyler? Earl Campbell and Johnny. That's all we got.
Zach Taylor.
We actually have some pretty good athletes. Aaron Ross was a John Tyler guy. Not a lot of basketball guys. No basketball. I know plenty of guys baseball, but none of them were, you know.
Well,
that's an argument for a different time, like you said.
Don't at me on your favorite.
Go ahead and close
Tyler Mount Rushmore, but all the other cities, you can add us and tell us what you think on that. Well, I think we've just about exhausted ourselves and all of our opinions on sports this week. So go out there, catch an A&M baseball game, softball game, big series this weekend. Catch some spring football coverage. We'll probably be back with that a little bit more next week.
Talking some football!
We have SEC men's basketball tournament. And then before we get back and talk, the NCAA, or the... A&M women will know what their postseason fate is as well with the selection show next Monday. So we'll probably get into all of that next week. You can check that out and keep up with us for that. So for Zach Taylor across the table over there, the award-winning Zach Taylor, I'm Travis Brown, and this is the My Aggie Nation Podcast. We will see you next week.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way it must have seemed. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't easy, girl, we know that's true. And if we want to keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. Just want to make sure, my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. I wanna make sure that we'll be all that we can be, all that we can be, all that we can be.